Welcome back to the Freedom Report podcast. I'm your host, Austin Peterson. If you enjoy our show today, go to iTunes, leave us a 5-star review, subscribe to us there, and if you don't have an Apple device, you can also find us on the Android app, Stitcher. Leave us a 5-star review on iTunes and a written review. Help us spread the message of economic freedom and personal liberty. Also, this show has great numbers of downloads every single day. Hundreds of thousands of people listen to this every single month, about 1 million listeners. So if you have a product, a brand, or a campaign that you'd like to advertise, reach out to us at the Libertarian Republic and talk about our advertising rates. Very reasonable rates for an enormous audience. Now, enjoy the show. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the show. Your host, Austin Peterson, here today. We're going to be talking about a little more serious topic. The other day on Monday, I produced a podcast on something a little bit more light. So I wanted to talk about something serious today because it involves issues of war and peace, national security. President Obama is going to Congress to ask them for power to use military force against ISIS, which could theoretically mean boots on the ground. And we're going to discuss what that means here in a moment. And we're going to discuss the libertarian perspective on this and my personal perspective. And I want to discuss this in light of the news, the recent news that Kayla Mueller, an American hostage who was taken hostage by ISIS, was killed. ISIS is claiming that she was murdered by the Jordanians, who recently started a bombing campaign as retaliation for the killing of one of their pilots. But today we're going to be talking about the issues of war and peace from legal perspectives, from moral perspectives, from ethical perspectives, from a theological perspective. And we need to discuss this because it's very important for us to make sure that we're being critically analyzing these issues of vital national importance. So today, I will be reading the story. This is from FoxNews.com today. President Obama opens the door to limited ground combat operations against ISIS. He asked Congress to formally authorize military force against the terrorist network. The president, in a proposed resolution and a letter to Congress, underscored the, quote, grave threat posed by ISIS. If left unchecked, ISIL will pose a threat beyond the Middle East, including to the United States' homeland, Obama said. The proposal includes limitations that would bar, quote, enduring offensive ground combat operations and let the authorization lapse after 3 years. The letter from Obama says the authorization would not allow long-term, large-scale ground combat operations like those conducted in Iraq and Afghanistan. But the request includes no restrictions on where U.S. forces could pursue the threat. And while the current military campaign centers on coalition airstrikes in Iraq and Syria, the proposal clearly allows U.S. ground troops to engage in limited circumstances. The authorization I propose would provide the flexibility to conduct ground combat operations in other more limited circumstances, such as rescue operations involving U.S. or coalition personnel, or the use of special operations forces to take military action against ISIL leadership, Obama wrote in his letter to Congress. It would also authorize the use of U.S. forces in situations where ground combat operations are not expected or intended, such as intelligence collection and sharing, missions to enable kinetic strikes, or the provision of operational planning and other forms of advice and assistance to partner forces. So just to break that down, what the president is saying there is that he would provide flexibility to conduct ground combat operations where, if, for example, there are rescue operations involving our U.S. or our allies, then they would allow special ops to take action against ISIL if they were to engage with one of those forces. So let's say one of our rescue operations is trying to rescue a hostage and they're besieged by ISIL forces. Well, then the president is basically saying that we'd allow the special ops to engage with ISIL forces, which is obviously very reasonable. And it would also authorize the use of U.S. forces in situations where ground combat is not expected or intended, such as intelligence collection and sharing. So basically, if we have so a lot of these smart bombs that the United States uses involve combat troops on the ground using lasers to paint a target. And so if for some reason those people who are on the ground pointing lasers at targets for airstrikes, then it would basically authorize special forces to defend the people who are using that technology, because you have to send in a ground team and then point lasers at targets so that these guided bombs can hit their targets. Well, if those people get attacked, those U.S. forces get attacked, or if they're out there intelligence gathering and they're attacked, well, then it would basically mean that these people would be able to be defended by special forces, which, again, very reasonable. Also, I think it's important to note that the president says that the proposal includes limitations that would bar enduring offensive ground combat operations and let the authorization lapse after 3 years. Again, very reasonable. Not the kind of thing we're used to from the executive office, where they say they voluntarily limit their power. And, you know, the interesting thing about this, of course, is that if you look at this from a legal perspective, in 2001, the executive branch was granted unlimited authorization to pursue the war on terror. So the president doesn't actually need to be doing what he's doing right now from a legal perspective. And I say that because the Congress did hand the authority to the president to wage a war on terror in any nation in the world anywhere. And that was an indefinite power. There was no sunset provision in the 2001 AUMF, is what it's called. Authorization for the use of military force. And I'm sort of surprised that the executive branch is being so democratic on this, because usually we have to fight the president in order to maintain the democratic processes when it comes to this. I'll be interested to see how people like Rand Paul, Thomas Massie, and Justin Amash will vote on this one. If I had to make a prediction on something like this for our libertarian-leaning congressman, I'm going to predict that Rand Paul might support it, Justin Amash will oppose it, and Thomas Massie, I can't predict what he's going to do. It's interesting. You know, he's more of a radical, but he seems to be fairly level-headed when it comes to national security issues, even though he's a radical libertarian as well. Amash is more of the hardcore dove, and we certainly appreciate that in Congress. But I suspect that Rand Paul will probably be on the more hawkish side of things. And I agree with that. I agree with the hawks on this one. I think that ISIS does pose not necessarily an existential threat, but a terroristic threat to the United States if they're allowed to gain power, and they have declared war on us. Remember, even from a non-interventionist perspective, where you don't, you know, if someone is not threatening you, like Ukraine is a good example, Russia is not threatening the territorial integrity of the United States and declaring war on the United States, ISIS is, and they are also kidnapping Americans, killing journalists, engaging in atrocities. They're, you know, killing Christians and slaughtering children and burying them headless, the headless bodies of children. It's just, they're absolute monsters. And that would be all, you know, horrible in itself. But think about this, you know, these people have actually declared war on the United States. And so to me, they are a fair game. But what the interesting thing from this, again, from that's the moral argument there for why I think that, attacking ISIS is to me morally legitimate. But also the legal perspective from this, it seems as if the president is going about this the right way. He's going to Congress and he's seeking a new authorization of force. He doesn't have to, but he's choosing to, and he's also offering to limit his own power. And now the Republicans are the type who are going to say, well, we don't want to have the president's hands tied. I mean, what's interesting about this is some people are saying that the Republican Congress might actually oppose the limitations on the power of the executive, which is sort of mind-blowing, because if you think about it, the Republicans have opposed everything that the president has done. And they would oppose this, of course, but I hope it's not just a knee-jerk response that they're opposing this. But I think that the reason their theories behind opposing this is perhaps, one, that they may have their own candidate in the White House in a few years, and they don't want his power checked to fight ISIS. And two, they just simply want war now, war forevermore, you know. And if that's the case, you know, then why don't they just, you know, vote this down and say, no, use the 2001 authorization of military force, which is an interesting thing, too. If you're more of an anti-war dove, if you're more on the Justin Amash side of these things, of this issue, then you might want to think about the fact that Ron Paul voted for that 2001 authorization of military force, which was the indefinite war on terror. And, you know, Paul always claimed that he always reads all the bills. Well, you know, if you read that 2001 authorization, he basically signed off on a blanket war on terror. So I would think about that. Now, that's just an argument from authority, but I do think that a lot of the people who support Ron Paul are probably going to be on the more dovish side of this, again, the more pacifist side of this, and maybe even saying, hey, we can't intervene when it comes to fighting ISIS. Well, I'd have to disagree with him on this one, not just because I've made more overtures towards, you know, a stronger national defense policy in recent months, but because it, you know, from a perspective, from a legal perspective, from a moral perspective, I do believe that ISIS is an actual threat, and that, you know, and I believe this not because of, you know, I just want, you know, blood or war or troops on the ground. I certainly don't. I believe this because of my contacts with high-level intelligence officials, and many of these high-level intelligence officials, one that I can publicly state, his name's Anthony Schaefer, Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Schaefer, which a lot of people are familiar with. If you've listened to the show, he's been on my show before, and he backs up these claims, the statements about the threat of ISIL. And the threats that they pose to the United States homeland if they are allowed to gather power. Now, White House Press Secretary Josh Earnest said that this provision that the president is asking for would allow special ops missions such as potential raids targeting Islamic State leaders and rescue efforts. It's impossible to envision every scenario where ground combat troops might be necessary, Earnest told the Associated Press. Very true. The request kicks off what's likely to be a drawn-out debate in Congress, with hawkish lawmakers sure to push for a broader authorization and anti-interventionist voices seeking more limits. Already, Virginia Democratic Senator Tim Kaine said he is concerned about the breadth and vagueness of the U.S. ground troop language and will seek to clarify it. That's good. Tennessee Senator Bob Corker, chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, said he appreciated the president seeking the authorization and would quickly begin holding, quote, rigorous hearings on the White House request. Voting to authorize the use of military force is one of the most important actions Congress can take, and while there will be differences, it's my hope that we will fulfill our constitutional responsibility and in a bipartisan way pass an authorization that allows us to confront this serious threat, Corker said. The White House insists it already has the authority to launch airstrikes against ISIS, as the U.S. has been doing for months, but wants Congress to sign off in order to demonstrate American unity. In a letter to lawmakers accompanying the request, Obama urged lawmakers to, quote, show the world we are united in our resolve to counter the threat. The proposed resolution listed ISIS atrocities, including executions of American hostages and the abduction, enslavement, torture, rape, and forced marriage of women and girls in the region. It threatens American personnel and facilities located in the region and is responsible for the deaths of U.S. citizens James Foley, Stephen Sotloff, Abdul Rahman Peter Kasich, and Kayla Mueller, Obama said. Obama will speak on his request from the White House today at 3:30 p.m. Today is the 11th of February. So today at 3:30 p.m. Eastern Time, the president is going to make a statement about this. Now, Obama's proposal is launching sort of an ideological debate over what authorities and limitations the commander-in-chief should have in pursuit of the extremists, with the shadow of lost American lives hanging over its fate. Confirmation of the death of 26-year-old humanitarian worker Mueller on the eve of Obama's proposal added urgency, while the costly long-running wars in Iraq and Afghanistan were a caution to some lawmakers against yet another protracted military campaign. Obama is offering to limit authorization to 3 years, extending to the next president the powers and the debate over renewal for what he envisions as a long-range battle. He is proposing no geographic limitations where U.S. forces could pursue the elusive militants. The authorization covers the Islamic State and associated persons or forces, defined as those fighting on behalf or alongside ISIS or any closely related successor entity in hostilities against the United States or its coalition partners. The proposal bars enduring offensive ground combat operations, which is an ambiguous term, which is intended as a compromise between lawmakers who want authority for ground troops and those don't. Obama's resolution would also repeal a 2002 authorization for force in Iraq, but maintain a 2001 authorization against Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. Although Obama said in his letter to lawmakers, his goal is to refine and ultimately repeal that authorization as well. Obama argues the congressional authorizations President Bush used to justify action after 9/11 are sufficient for him to deploy more than 2,700 U.S. troops to train and assist Iraqi security forces and conduct ongoing airstrikes against targets in Iraq and Syria. Critics have said Obama's overstepping outdated authorities to target the new threat from militants, imposing a violent form of Sharia law in pursuit of the establishment of an Islamic State. Very interesting. Now, here's something that was posted to me yesterday from one of my buddies on Facebook, his congressman, Lee Zeldin. And I want to read to his, Lee Zeldin's statement, which I think is a very balanced and even statement on this. The president is now coming to Congress for authorization of force against ISIS. The big question in deciding my vote is whether the strategy will be to actually get the job done with an overwhelming use of force, or if the plan is just to give it half an effort. There's no need at all for any type of occupation or sustained presence. There's no need to approach this as if it's a conventional battlefield requiring lots of troops. I believe in American exceptionalism and our ability to be strong, resolute, and confident in the execution of in the execution of a precise, overwhelming, and devastating blow. Yes, our military has been overstretched. The conflicts from over the past decade have been costly with American lives, limbs, and money. Most importantly, lives. Birthdays have been missed, holidays, and anniversaries. The sacrifice has been great. Mark my words, if we do not partner with our allies now and step up quickly and aggressively, it will be 100 times more challenging if we wait 5 more years. You cannot simply wish this conflict away. Sometimes you look for conflict, but other times, like now, conflict finds you. With all this being said, the strategy must be to win quickly with overwhelming precision. I will not ever support sending the world's finest warriors into battle to fail. This is the litmus test. Very, very good. Of course, now we have to be intellectually honest here. I mean, how did ISIS manage to rise and take over much of Iraq? Well, it had to do with our blundering of the 2002 invasion of Iraq. Now, whatever you want to look at in the past is already the past, and we learn our lessons from it, but we have to deal with the problems as they lay on the ground. So I think that, we can kick George W. Bush in the butt for all we want for his mistakes, but we have to also look at the fact that, from an objective perspective, I mean, why are Republicans going to trust Obama now to be able to handle something like this? I mean, I understand, I think it's a good thing that what Obama's doing to go and try and get new authorization, as well as trying to repeal the 2002 invasion of Iraq authorization, this would basically replace it, but again, I'm skeptical that the president has the guts and the courage to be able to face down the Islamic State, because a lot of his statements in the past have shown, I think, a sidestepping of the real issues when it comes to dealing with Islamic terrorism. You know, you can fight all you want and you can kill as many terrorists as you want, but honestly, you're going to have to fight the ideological struggle sooner or later. I think Obama doesn't want to do that. I think that he wants his predecessor to probably have to be the guy who deals with it. Now, the president, if we're going to be dealing with ground forces in the next couple of years, you know, he's going to have 2 years to fight him as hard as he can before he hands it off to his predecessor. And then his predecessor is going to be left with most likely another mess, another George W. Bush-style mess. Not quite as large of a blunder, but again, why are people so quick to trust this president who have never trusted him before to handle anything properly? It's not that I don't think that it's going to take combat forces to defeat these Islamic terrorists, but I think that the problem is that we have a little bit too much faith in the executive and his ability to do things, whereas we never had any faith in him to do it before. And that's just me being skeptical on this issue. What do you think, ladies and gentlemen? Do you think that we should send ground combat troops in to fight ISIS, special operations forces such as the one that the president is asking for authorization for now? And do you think that it's important that we do have these kinds of democratic deliberations, that we have the checks and balances such as president is instituting? It seems to me as if the president is actually making a very level-headed decision on this one, and what he's asking for it makes a lot of sense. But I want to know what you think about this, so why don't you send me an email, go to libertarianrepublic.com. I'm going to include, in the end of this podcast, I'm going to include an interview that I did with a young 16-year-old man about national security issues. We're going to segue a little bit here, talk about surveillance, warrantless surveillance, and privacy issues. A kid by the name of Brandon Keebler has got this new Project Digital Privacy that he's working on, and I had a brief interview with him yesterday discussing the National Security Agency, discussing local police forces using this Stingray technology, which basically mimics cell phone towers, gathers blanket collection of data from American citizens, and I think it's an issue of vital importance, and I thought it was interesting that this young 16-year-old man had taken upon himself to start a project to counter this unwarranted surveillance. So I'm going to include this interview here at the end of this. It's a brief interview, 8 minutes. I hope you'll enjoy it. And if you do enjoy the show, again, subscribe to us on iTunes and go to the Libertarian Republic. Enjoy every single day your home for economic freedom and personal liberty at thelibertarianrepublic.com. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Report podcast. Today, my special guest is Brandon Keebler. He's a 16-year-old who's mounting a fight against unwarranted surveillance called Project Digital Privacy. Brandon, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Austin.
Brandon, it's good to talk to you. My first question is, how did you become interested in issues of national security and civil liberties?
So it all starts back to when I was about 14 and a half. So I was down in Orlando, Florida. I was staying there for vacation, and I woke up one morning and I saw on my TV, I looked, and it was right about the time that the Snowden reports were coming out. And I saw it, and as any other American was, as I saw it, I thought it was terrible and this horrible thing. And I didn't want to grow up in a world like that, and it was just that simple, and I started to act.
Excellent. So most of the people in your peer group are just worried about finding a date for prom. So how do they react when you express concern for such pressing matters, Brandon?
Generally, at least with my friends and the people I know, they've all been really receptive. Obviously, you're gonna have that bad apple once in a while saying, "Hey, you're too young to do anything. You don't matter." But generally, it's been a really good reaction. People want to make change.
It's only the people who believe that they can change the world that actually do, Brandon. The ACLU has been warning about the use of the Stingray devices by police. What is this technology and how can we fight it, Brandon?
Yeah, so the Stingray, also known as IMSI catchers, so what they do is they act as basically fake cell phone towers. So what police agencies can do is they can use, they can go and they can buy one of these Stingray devices. They range from about $12,000 upwards. And what they do is they'll usually in some sort of a van. Set it up, and with all the passing, cell phones, electronics that go by them, they pick up any stray, mobile data, text messages, etc., in sort of a dragnet surveillance. Whereas, personally, in most people's opinions, if they're going to use something like that, it should be directed towards just one person that they know is the criminal, not towards everybody else.
What do you hope to accomplish with Project Digital Privacy?
So what I really hope to accomplish is obviously, the end goal for any digital privacy activist is to make sure that all unwarranted surveillance is gone. But right now, we're really focusing at the local level to try and end unwarranted, unconstitutional surveillance in as many cities right now as we can.
Excellent. And what's been the response so far?
So far, it's been really, really good. Really good.
Can you expand?
Yeah, so as far as cities that we're working in, we're working in two cities in Pennsylvania. We're looking with the New York Big Apple Coffee Party to, maybe look to introduce something into the New York State. And we're also talking with the Florida Libertarian Movement as well to talk about introducing something, our resolution into a county of about 1 million in Florida.
Wow, fantastic. So, what do you think when somebody says that we have to sacrifice security or liberty for security?
I really don't think that that's true, to be honest. I know Congress, they did a study, within the last year that showed, out of all of the National Security Agency, DEA, FBI surveillance that they could at least find that, the government agencies would give up, that they had found zero, so none, examples of reported cases where their digital surveillance had stopped any sort of terrorism.
Do you have any presidential candidates that you favor for 2016 at all, Brandon?
I'm 16, and
You're not
I won't be able to vote
vote,
actually.
but is there
I'm
anybody
gonna
that you'd
miss the
like?
mark by like 10 days. But really, I don't have anyone that I know. I as far as politicians go, really the only one that I'm favorable to as far as digital surveillance goes is Justin Amash.
He's a good one. What do you think about Senator Rand Paul?
Senator Rand Paul. Obviously that there are issues that we disagree on. Most notably his recent spiel of the vaccines cause autism thing. But generally I like what he's trying to do, but I definitely don't think it's enough in terms of digital privacy.
Good to know. Good to know. So, what do you get? Where do you find inspiration, and how do you find the information that you're looking for in order to advance your cause?
As far as inspiration, it really just stems from that, you know, I don't want to live in a world like this. I don't want to grow up in a world like this. And, you know, I don't want my kids to grow up in a world like this. Mm-hmm. And as far as where, you know, I get sources, information from, it really just comes from going down the rabbit hole in a lot of really deep Google searches.
Excellent. Excellent. So what's the next move?
The next move is just to wait, keep pushing, hopefully to go ahead and start getting Resolution introduced in different cities across the country.
Fantastic, Brandon. Where can people find more information about the Project Digital Privacy?
Yeah, so you can find us at our website, projectdigitalprivacy.org, or you can hit us up on Facebook or Twitter at PD Privacy. So P like polar and D like donkey.
Excellent, excellent. So I want to expand on this conversation because you know, a lot of these things have to do with issues of national security, and you know, libertarians tend to be a little bit more non-interventionist on certain things. But you mentioned earlier about targeting when it comes to how to use the Stingray technology. So you're not against the technology in general, just about the idea that there's a blanket warrantless spying going on. Is that correct?
For sure. I mean, I know I talked to an Indianapolis police chief about this a few weeks back, and it was really informational. And I mean, I generally see, I mean, there's definitely cases where it's, you know, it's warranted, but my big problem with it is generally the dragnet side where, you know, you'll go up to, say, an apartment building, and instead of the one room you need to collect from, you collect the entire apartment building and the one next to it and the one next to it and all the cars passing by.
Mm-hmm. So what sort of methods do you approve of when it comes to fighting the war on terror?
As far as fighting the war on terror, I mean, personally, I really, as far as like going into, you know, places like Iraq, you know, anywhere in the Middle East, I mean, personally, I would just rather stay out of it and let them, you know, fight themselves, to be honest. But, I mean, I really think that things like Stingray can be useful, but as long as they're used in moderation with warrants, not from FISA courts where, you know, everything gets passed. And I mean, as long as they use it with discretion and have, you know, a good knowledge of civil rights when they're using it.
Fantastic. Well, Brandon, this is very interesting. I mean, it's sort of amazing that you picked up on all this at such a young age. Any plans to run for office one day?
Not currently, but who knows what the future holds.
All right, Brandon, we're going to keep an eye on this. Ladies and gentlemen, you want to check out his Project Digital Privacy. Brandon Keepler, 16 years old, quite an impressive young man. Brandon, I appreciate your service for the cause of liberty. Thank you for coming on the show today.
Thanks for letting me on here.
Fantastic. Have a good one.
You too.